Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I always thought I knew Kiota. We shared an apartment for 2 years, and although we weren't the best of friends, we got along well. Kyoto was well reserved and quiet.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1. Go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
But always had something interesting to say when he talked. He could spend hours at his computer writing essays or reading about whatever topic interested him at the time. He never struck me as odd. He was an intelligent guy. A little antisocial maybe, but nothing that bothered me. We used to discuss politics, movies, and even philosophy from time to time. He was always fascinated by anarchy, chaos, and how society was rotten to the core. I wasn't alone in thinking that, but while I saw those things as topics of conversation, Kyoto seemed to take them more seriously. Very seriously. But I never thought it was anything more than just room talk. The first time I noticed something odd was when he started mentioning the Joker frequently. I don't mean the casual references everyone makes about the character. Kyoto was mentioning him as if he was a role model, a sort of symbol for what he called true freedom. At first, I thought it was just a phase, you know, like when someone becomes obsessed with a character because they see a movie or read a comic book. It wasn't until later that I realized it went beyond that. The clothes were also a cue. He started buying strange clothes like purple suits and green shirts. At first, I took it as a joke, something ironic. I even laughed the first time I saw him in full costume in the living room, like he was getting ready for Halloween in the middle of June. But when he started dressing like that more often, I didn't think it was funny anymore. Something about him was changing, and I couldn't ignore it anymore. I started watching him more closely. He was spending more and more time in his room, and when he came out, he had a smile that didn't seem genuine. A smile that didn't reach his eyes. But the worst was when I started noticing the searches on his computer. Yes, I'm guilty of going through his computer a time or two. Not because I wanted to spy, but because I was concerned about what he was doing. Something was telling me things weren't going well. The first thing I found were searches related to the Joker. But it wasn't trivial information. They were deep, almost philosophical questions about how to become truly free. There were also many searches on how to manipulate people and how to cause chaos in society without getting caught. That made me nervous, but I thought maybe he was just doing research for some essay. Kyoto was always an intellectual type, so I tried not to make assumptions. Until I saw something I couldn't ignore. Several searches on the death penalty in Japan. It asked specifically what it took to be sentenced to death. It was obvious what I was thinking, but I refused to accept it. It couldn't be that Kyoto was considering something so extreme. Not him. However, the signs were there, and they were getting harder and harder to ignore. The straw that broke the camel's back was an email I found. It was scheduled to be sent a few hours later. A detailed message outlining a plan. He didn't mention names, but talked about the first step toward something bigger. Something he believed would immortalize him. He mentioned that he was going to kill someone. Worst of all, he did it with a frightening calmness, as if it were part of a routine. As if he was talking about shopping. When I read that email, I felt the floor move. I couldn't stand by and do nothing. I tried to talk to him, but Kyoto was not the same. he wasn't reacting like a normal person would. He was looking at me with that damn smile as if everything was a game to him. I tried to reason with him. I told him that what he was doing was crazy and that he needed help.
Help? It's the society that's sick. I'm just freeing myself from its chains.
He spoke with a conviction that gave me chills. I knew at that moment there was no turning back. Kyoto had crossed a line I didn't even know existed. I decided to follow him. I had to know how far he was willing to go. That night, as he was getting ready to leave, I saw him putting on the Joker costume. I hid in the living room, watching from a crack in the door. He had no idea I was following him. When he left the apartment, I followed him at a safe distance. I watched him head toward the subway, a place that had always been crowded. My heart was pounding. I didn't know what to expect, but I was sure it was nothing good. Kyoto walked as if he had a purpose, as if he already knew what he was going to do. And in a way, I think he did. I followed him to a side entrance to the subway tunnel, one that few knew about. It was deserted. There was no guard, not a single soul. Just the two of us. I saw him stop, and I knew it was time to confront him. If I was going to do anything, it had to be now. I approached cautiously, but he had already heard me. He turned to me, and that crooked smile spread across his face.
I know you're following me.
Kyoto, I don't know what you're planning to do, but you're going too far.
Oh, dear friend, you have no idea how far I'll go. You are about to witness something wonderful.
I had no idea what he was talking about, but his tone made my hair stand on end. It was as if he was no longer Kyoto. The man I knew was gone, and in his place was this monster. I tried to talk to him, to beg him to stop, to not do something he couldn't come back from, but it was no use. He hit me before I could react. I had no idea what he was talking about. When I fell to the ground, he just stood there laughing sickly. Before I could get up, he had kicked me again. It wasn't an angry kick. He was happy. He was delighted with what he was doing to me, stopping, kicking me at times just to watch what I was doing and witness the result. I gathered all my energy to attack him for the last time, got up and threw myself at him. But he knocked me to the ground with a punch in the face, leaving me stunned. I felt the metallic taste of blood in my mouth as I tried to get up.
Dude, I don't plan to kill you. Calm down a bit. You can't be the first victim. That has to be something, ironic.
Those words echoed in my head as I tried to understand what was going on. It wasn't just a man in disguise. Kyoto really believed he was the Joker who was staging some sort of macabre act to prove his point about the world. I tried to get up, but the pain in my body prevented me. He left me there as if I was insignificant, as if I wasn't worth killing. He turned and headed for the subway, his laughter echoing in the empty tunnel. I watched him walk away, and something inside me snapped. I knew I had lost my friend, that the person I had known no longer existed. Kyoto had become something else, something I couldn't quite understand, but that I knew was beyond redemption. I stood there for what seemed like hours trying to gather the strength to follow him. I couldn't let it end like this. I couldn't let him kill someone. With each passing second, my desperation grew. Finally, I got up and, staggering, ran to the subway. By the time I got there, it was too late. Kyoto had boarded the car. I could see him waving to me as the door closed. And then, before the subway left, I heard him. It all happened in a matter of seconds. Screams echoed everywhere as people fled in panic. I heard later that Kyoto had stabbed several people. Fortunately, no one was killed. That was the only thing that gave me some comfort. But it wasn't enough. Kyoto had gotten what he wanted. He was arrested soon after. I saw the news, the headlines. The Tokyo Joker, they called him. He had become a legend of sorts, and that was what hurt me the most. He loved that. Kyoto was sentenced to 24 years in prison, not the death penalty he wanted so badly. And I was left with guilt, with the constant question of whether I could have done something to stop it before it all got to this point. I could have talked to someone. I could have called the police. But I didn't. And now all that's left is emptiness.
My name is Paul Amato. My name may not ring a bell to anyone, but I assure you that people will remember my brother's name. My brother Grant was a private guy, always a little distant, but no one in the family ever thought he would get to the point where we would find ourselves in the middle of a tragedy that was impossible to process. What happened the night Grant decided to kill us all wasn't simply a case of a disturbed mind. It was something much darker. An unstoppable descent into madness. Grant always had trouble finding his place in the world. While my older brother Cody and I managed to have some stability in our lives, he couldn't hold down a job or a steady course. He tried to become a nurse, just like Cody, but was fired for incompetence. My father Chad tried to put pressure on him, to try to help him get his life back on track, but that only brought him down even further. My mother Margaret tried to protect him, as any mother would, but sometimes that only made things worse. At first, Grant's thing with the Joker was just another thing, a passing obsession that we thought would go away in time. We'd see him put on makeup and talk about anarchy and how society was a joke, but we thought it was just a phase. We never imagined it would be the beginning of his downfall. But it wasn't just his obsession with the Joker that destroyed him. Grant went from being just another fan to someone consumed by a double life he hid behind a screen. He hooked up with a webcam model on an adult site, a Russian woman who seemed to be his whole world. What started as a distraction ended up becoming a dangerous addiction. He began spending absurd amounts of money on her, seeking more and more of her attention and paying for every minute of conversation. He took out loans, used my parents' money, and racked up debts that would soon come to light. When my parents discovered what he was doing, they exploded. My father, furious, confronted him, demanding an explanation. But all Grant had to offer were excuses and justifications. He repeated the Joker's words as if they were absolute truth. My father, in a fit of desperation, threw him out of the house. My mother cried, begging him to reconsider, but Grant's debts and behavior had gone too far. We could no longer tolerate his lies. For a while, it seemed like the worst was over. Grant temporarily moved in with a friend, but his obsession did not abate. He would spend hours in front of the screen talking to this Russian woman and becoming more and more immersed in this fantasy. Every time he watched it, something in him seemed to be shutting down. It wasn't just desperation for money or isolation. It was something deeper, as if his reality had begun to crumble. He was no longer talking about anything but the Joker. He said he finally understood how the world worked, that there was only chaos, and that we were the blind ones. Soon after, Grant came home, but not like before. Something in his eyes told me there was no turning back. My father tried to keep his distance, but my mother, as always, wanted to give him one last chance. However, things became more and more tense. The yelling became more frequent, and Grant began to isolate himself more and more. He would spend days at a time locked in his room until one night, it all exploded. I had come home late from work. Cody wasn't home, and my mother had prepared dinner, but everything was completely silent. I walked into the dining room, and there she was, sitting. But something didn't fit. I walked over, and then I saw it. She had a knife stuck in her stomach. My mother, Margaret, was dead. That's when I heard a laugh. It was no ordinary laughter. It was a laughter that echoed throughout the house, a distorted, almost inhuman laughter. I turned around, and there was Grant, his face painted like the Joker, the white makeup, the exaggerated red lips, and that smile that wouldn't come off, even while holding a gun in his hand.
Do you like the joke? It's super funny, isn't it?
Grant, what did you do? Even though I knew perfectly well what had happened, wasn't my brother standing in front of me. That thing wearing his face was something else. something broken.
I'm like the Joker. I finally understand it all. The Joker is not an actor, not a comic book, not a fictional character. He is a feeling of nonconformity, a feeling of wanting to escape from everything.
What the hell are you talking about? Look what you've done to Mom.
Freed her. You're all fools trying to control something you can't. But I got it. I transcended. Yes, I did.
My mind was foggy as I tried to process what was happening. I knew my father must be in his office in the back of the house, so I ran over there. But when I opened the door, I saw him lying on the floor, shot in the head. Chad, the man who had taught us to stand our ground, lay dead because of his son. Grant had followed me. I could hear him walking behind me, laughing as I wept at the sight of our father.
You thought I was going to leave him alive? Him?
No. No, he can't be dead.
Oh, but he is. Look!
In laughter, my brother grabbed my head and plunged it against my father's bloody body. As he did so, he rubbed me over and over again, so that I would feel his bullet wound on my skin. The psychopath began to lose strength from laughing so hard, so I took the moment to throw myself on him. This was useless. I was surprised by his strength. The madness had given him an energy I could never have imagined. My brother simply threw me flying away from him. I managed to get up and ran to the kitchen, looking for something to defend myself. My eyes found a knife, the same kind of knife he killed Mom with. Grant appeared in the doorway, breathing hard but with that damn smile still on his face.
Oh, come on! What do you think you'll do with that? Can you kill someone? I don't think so.
He lunged at me, but this time I was ready. With the knife in my hand, I defended myself. I tried to stab him in the stomach, but instead I just cut him a little. His laughter turned into a scream of rage. He seemed furious at the simple fact that I was trying to defend myself as if he hadn't expected it. At that moment, he slowly backed away and began to laugh. This was not a laugh indicating that he was amused by the situation. It was a laugh of anger, a completely uncontrolled laugh. At that moment, he grabbed a knife from the table, and I knew he meant business. I knew that one of us was going to die. Even with my knife in hand, I ran as fast as I could. He didn't hesitate to chase me. It was as if he hadn't known me all my life, as if I was nothing more than prey. As soon as I ran out the door, I ran into a man much taller than me. The man was accompanied by two policemen. He pointed a gun at me, telling me to drop the knife, and as soon as I did, I warned them that my brother was armed. Once Grant saw them, to my surprise, he dropped his knife.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And surrendered. It seems he valued his life much more than his philosophy. The police had been alerted by neighbors since my parents. They had screamed a lot when they were killed. My brother Cody never came home that night. He was on duty at the hospital, which probably saved his life. The press covered it as a family crime. They talked about Grant's addiction to adult content, how he got into debt, and how debt drove him to despair. But no one talked about his obsession with the Joker, how his mind became distorted to a point of no return. To them, it was just another case of a broken family. For me, it was the moment when real chaos entered our lives and left nothing standing. The only thing I have today is my brother, and we take care of each other. We've already lost a lot of family members, and we swore to each other that it would never happen again. Being a teacher at South Vermilion High had always been uneventful. It was a routine I had mastered after 10 years of teaching English to teenagers who spent more time looking at their phones than paying attention to me. The days passed with no surprises. The classes flowed, and I was on a sort of autopilot until Sarah started acting weird. Sarah Mitchell had always been a model student. She was reserved, but attentive. She did her homework on time and usually excelled at tests. She didn't talk much in class, but her behavior had never been a cause for concern. However, everything began to change subtly and disturbingly. It started with a look. During class, instead of concentrating on her work or books, Sarah began to stare at me. At first, I took it as a simple case of distraction, something that could happen to any student. But this wasn't normal. It wasn't a simple stare. It was more like a silent obsession. I could feel her eyes on me while I was talking or writing on the board. I would turn around, and there she would be, staring at me with an intensity that made me deeply uncomfortable. The first few days, I did nothing. What was I supposed to do? Scold her for looking at me? But as time went on, her stares became more disturbing, and with them, her behavior became even stranger. One afternoon, while explaining a topic on Shakespeare, I noticed that Sarah was not taking notes like the rest of the students. When I turned my gaze to her, I was met with something more disturbing. She was smiling. Not a happy or a natural smile, but a forced, crooked smile, almost as if she was mocking something only she understood. It was a smile that was so cold, it made me pause for a second. The other students didn't even notice, but I felt a chill. Over the next few days, things only got worse. Sarah seemed to completely disconnect from what was going on in class. While the others worked on their assignments or participated in discussions, she would stand still with that fixed smile, staring at me from her seat. There were times when I thought maybe it was a personal problem or something going on outside the classroom, but I didn't ask. Something in me didn't want to know the answer. One afternoon, the situation became even stranger. Sarah asked to stay after class, saying she needed help with her essay. I agreed, thinking maybe this was an opportunity to talk and see if something was wrong. But when the rest of the students left, Sarah didn't mention the essay. She just stood there, silent, looking at me. that same disturbing smile was still on her face. "Sarah, do you need help with something?" She didn't answer immediately. She just watched me for a few long seconds before she said quietly,
"You are perfect."
That word, said in such a strange way, left me not knowing what to say. Then, without further ado, she turned around and left the classroom. The next few days became increasingly uncomfortable. Sarah continued to watch me in this obsessive manner. Every time I looked up, there she was, always with that strange smile. My other students began to notice it too, whispering amongst themselves. It was obvious that Sarah's behavior was no longer going unnoticed. Worst of all, Sarah was not interacting with the others. She didn't talk to her classmates, nor did she participate in class. It seemed that her only interest was to look at me. I was trying to get on with my work, but that constant, disturbing presence began to get to me. It got to a point where I felt uncomfortable just being in the classroom with her. Finally, I decided to talk to the school counselor, but when I explained what was going on, she looked at me as if I was overreacting. She said that she was just a teenager going through a phase. Maybe she was right, but that didn't take away from the fact that it was terrifying. On Tuesday, the tension reached an unbearable point. While teaching a class on poetry, Sarah got up from her seat without asking permission. She walked slowly to the door without saying a word. Everyone looked at her, surprised. "Sarah, where are you going?" She didn't answer. She just walked out of the classroom. Minutes after Sarah left the classroom, I decided I couldn't leave her wandering the halls. I asked the others to continue reading and went in search of her. I knew something wasn't right. I found her in the woman's restroom. The door was ajar, and from outside I could hear something like a whisper, or maybe the sound of something sharp scraping against a hard surface. I opened the door cautiously and was transfixed by what I saw. Sarah was standing in front of the mirror, completely transformed. Her face was covered in white makeup that made her look like a corpse, and her lips were painted in exaggerated red, like a grotesque grimace. But the worst were the cuts. Two deep lines ran from the corners of her lips to her cheeks, imitating the Joker's deformed smile. In her hand, she held a razor, the blade still dripping with fresh blood. I froze. She looked up and saw me through the mirror. That same crooked smile was still there, but now it was real, cut into her skin. "Sarah, what did you do?" There was no answer. Sarah turned slowly, razor still in hand, and began to walk toward me. Reality hit hard as I saw the blade of the razor glint under the bathroom lights. Sarah didn't look upset. She didn't seem to be in pain. She seemed calmer than I'd ever seen her, as if what she had just done to her face had some kind of purpose. I instinctively backed away, feeling my back hit the bathroom door. "Sarah, please stop it." I tried to reason with her, but there was no reaction. Her gaze was fixed on me, her eyes empty of any trace of the girl I once knew. Everything in her body said she was ready to attack me, as if there was something inside her pushing her to do so. She started moving faster, and I tried to keep my distance, but the space was small. My eyes were riveted on the knife she was still holding tightly. It was clear she wasn't going to stop. Every second that passed, I felt the panic begin to take hold of me. I ran away from the bathroom, and she ran after me. I went into my classroom to defend myself. In retrospect, that was a terrible idea. I was endangering my students. But at the time, I was panicking, and I didn't think. I guess I just wanted to be somewhere safe. Finally, I made a quick decision. I grabbed a chair and used it as a makeshift shield. Every time Sarah approached, I would push the chair toward her, trying to keep her away. She wouldn't stop and seemed more and more determined to catch me. None of her companions wanted to get involved. They were all yelling at her to stop, but they were also terrified. Finally, some of the students got up the courage to escape from the classroom and go tell the authorities. Sarah kept moving forward, knife raised, getting closer and closer. If someone didn't save me, Sarah was going to kill me. I knew I couldn't keep defending myself much longer. The sound of hurried footsteps came from the hallway. Just as Sarah raised the knife for a final blow, two school staff members burst into the classroom. They grabbed her before she could hurt me anymore, struggling to control her as she writhed in their arms, screaming at me that she was beautiful. It was chaos. The razor fell to the floor, and Sarah was finally subdued. My body trembled as I stood there, watching her being taken away. I couldn't understand what had happened. How had it all come about? After the incident, everything changed. Sarah was moved to a mental institution in Bloomington. None of the students or staff wanted to talk about what had happened. It was as if everyone was just trying to forget the incident as quickly as possible. I continued teaching, but nothing would ever be the same. Every time I walked into class, I couldn't help but remember Sarah. Her crooked smile, the razor's edge. I was afraid of what might have been going on in her mind before it all fell apart. I never heard from her again, but every time a student asked me for permission to go to the bathroom, I can't help but wonder.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What could be waiting behind that door?
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.